I'm thrilled to be joined by ASN Senior Director of Policy and Government Affairs, Rachel Meyer. Rachel and I have worked together at ASN for 12 years. Unfortunately, Rachel has decided to become Deputy Chief of Staff at Project ECHO. ECHO stands for Extension for Community Health Outcomes in her home state of New Mexico. In this role, Rachel will interact with policymakers in the United States and internationally, as well as support Project ECHO through its strategic planning, organization management, in collaboration with the University of New Mexico Health Sciences Center. Rachel, welcome.
Thank you, Todd. It's a pleasure to be here.
I was trying to figure out a way to work in the land of enchantment into the intro, but I couldn't figure out how to do it. So I guess our loss is the land of enchantment's gain. How about that?
Perfect.
So I've been debating how best to start. I was thinking maybe just to start at the beginning in terms of what was it about either ASN or the kidney community that was appealing to you when you applied initially for the position with ASN?
Let's see, thinking back more than 12 years ago, I had spent about a year working in DC at a consulting company called the Advisory Board Company. But prior to that, I had worked in Senator Ken Salazar's district office in Colorado. And I was interested in getting back into a role that was more policy-centric than my consulting job had been. And when I saw a position open up at ASN on the government affairs team, I was immediately interested because I actually have an uncle who has kidney disease. So I understood on a personal level the importance of kidney health and kidney care, and thought that this could be an organization where I can make a difference on on a professional level, but also in something that had a lot of personal importance to my family. I'm happy to report that my uncle is more than 16 years out from his kidney transplant, which he received from my aunt as a living donation. So it's been, I think, gratifying for the whole family to kind of watch from afar as I work to improve kidney care for others.
How important do you think it is for someone who's working in an advocacy role to have a personal connection to, in this case, kidney diseases?
I definitely think the patient advocates are the most effective because of how it's touched their lives or the lives of a loved one. But I also have seen plenty of remarkable advocates just who can truly inspire policymakers to get invested in an issue and make change who haven't personally been touched. I mean, I think the ASN leadership is a great example of this. I don't think that many of them have been touched by kidney disease on a personal level, and yet it's something that they've dedicated their career and their lives to. So when you see them go up to Capitol Hill or talk with people in the Department of Health and Human Services, they're really, truly speaking from the heart. And that, I think, is what's most important. The most important ingredient in any advocate is to come forward with a sense of authenticity and commitment to what they're addressing.
Yeah, I would agree about the authenticity and also the really being invested in the specifics or the substance of a topic and taking the time to learn them. I know when you first started working with ASN, you spent a lot of time with different constituencies, and just sort of curious as to which issues you were most interested in at a sort of macro level.
So when I first joined ASN, it was right around the time that the Affordable Care Act was being passed in Congress. And one of the things that has always fascinated me about the kidney care landscape is how, in many ways, the Medicare ESRD program, launched in the early 1970s, kind of presaged access to universal health care. And of course, the Affordable Care Act didn't go quite as far as universal health care, but in many ways, the experiences that were happening in kidney care kind of foretold what would happen in the rest of at least government-run healthcare in our country. And that became even more true when the first fully bundled payment system came into effect, as well as the first fully mandatory pay-for-performance program. It's kind of remarkable when I take a step back to think that now value-based care is something that is, a widely bipartisan, very agreed upon the future of healthcare. In fact, it sort of is healthcare in many ways today. Yet just 12 years ago, kidney care was the first arena to ever have a mandatory pay-for-performance program. So I sensed at the time what an unusual opportunity it was to be on, in some ways, the cutting edge of the future of healthcare in the work that I was doing at ASN.
How well known do you think this through line is, starting with the Medicare ESRD program in the early 70s through the bundled payment system in the sort of late 2000s into the Affordable Care Act and sort of the unique place that the kidney care and kidney policy fit?
Yeah. Well, I think it's obviously well known within the kidney community. I think there's a very limited number of other policymakers and thought leaders who are aware of the through lines, as you say. And I would add on to that, two of the first and only specialty specific Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation payment models. So, you know, again, kidney care has proven to be kind of a trend leader. And yet, I think the rest of medicine and American healthcare could learn a lot more than they currently do by looking at kidney disease.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You and I have been in enough meetings together where people will be talking about, you know, the need for more clinical trials, and they'll point to oncology as a model. And if you kind of step back and think about the compare and contrast between kidney care and cancer care, what's interesting is I feel like with kidney care, there's been a lot of these interesting policy decisions, but there hasn't been the investment. And you look on the sort of cancer side, and you have, you know, in the FDR's administration, they create the National Kidney Institute. Then in the Nixon administration, in addition to the Medicare ESRD program, they create, you know, they declare war on cancer. They make this huge investment. You then have the cancer moonshot and the discussions around ARPA-H focusing mostly on cancer. So it's a fascinating compare and contrast. And I'm trying to walk this carefully. I'm just sort of curious, as you're now shifting into a new place, sort of what your reaction to that observation would be.
Yeah, I think when I think about the parallels between our country's investment in cancer versus our country's investment in kidney care, it seems that the bet that was placed on cancer was a huge investment in research. And that has, in many ways, paid off in the sense that there are, you know, countless clinical trials ongoing in cancer. You know, we have gene-based therapy. The field has really leapfrogged probably several times since the 1970s, when, as you said, the war on cancer was declared. You know, in contrast, the decision in kidney was to really ensure universal access to the available treatment of the day, which was pretty miraculous, you know, dialysis. You know, I think in the intervening years, less progress was made, though progress was made, but relative to cancer, less progress was probably made on the kidney innovation front, as far as new therapies, drugs, prevention, preventive tactics, devices, because the federal government's emphasis was on distributing the available mode of care, which was dialysis. You know, today, I think we're at a really interesting pivot point in the kidney community where it's being recognized by the federal government at the highest levels and increasingly by investors that this is a space that patients have probably not been as well served as, say, cancer patients, as far as really cutting edge treatments for the last, you know, many decades. And it's, you know, increasingly, I hope, an area where we'll start to see an uptick in innovation. That's in no way intended to demean the remarkable accomplishments of the Medicare ESRD program and of dialysis in keeping people alive. As I said at the outset, my own uncle, you know, was on dialysis and, you know, wouldn't be here today without it.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned the pivot point and sort of what's happened over the last 12 years to get us to this pivot point. And a lot of that has been investments in research, discovery, and innovation, and in a lot of sort of scientific advancements, both in the community and then in related sort of specialties that are being applied. But from a policy perspective, as you've been spending your time over the last, you know, decade plus, what are some of the sort of seminal moments that you remember where there were these advances to get us to this point?
An early debate I remember having, and this sticks out so vividly in my mind, is I was struck in my early time at ASN that many stakeholders who predated me with experience in the kidney field did not want to talk about the cost of the Medicare ESRD program. And I thought that was really interesting because in my mind, spending, I think it was time, approximately $30 billion a year meant that was a great hook to get policymakers interested in focusing on a disease that they clearly were not as interested in focusing on at the time as other areas, you know, also worthy, but cancer, HIV, etc. And, you know, over time, I think the community's become much more comfortable with embracing the magnitude of what the program is. And that has been one important hook to get policymakers to pay attention to it. I think equally important, of course, is really telling the story of the patient burden. And the patient community, at least in the time since I've been at ASN, has really become a much more vibrant and vocal constellation of organizations. And without them really putting a face as far as what they wanted to see better in their kidney care. And typically that was, well, I wish there'd been some intervention before I got to kidney failure, and I wish I had something other than dialysis. I think pairing those really powerful stories with the fact that our government spends just a staggering amount of money, I think it's 1% of the federal budget, on, you know, less than 1 million people in the Medicare ESRD program, that sort of laid the foundation to get policymakers' interests. The second moment that really sticks out in my mind is the first meeting that ASN had with the Food and Drug Administration when Ron Falk was president. And there were probably 30 people in the room, more than half of them nephrologists from the FDA. And it was the first time that I'd heard the term kidney health, I think, used. And that, to me, was a seminal moment when ASN and the Food and Drug Administration started talking about what can we do to improve kidney health, not just kidney disease. Of course, that fateful meeting eventually led to the creation of the Kidney Health Initiative. And that effort pushed the term, but more importantly, a sense that kidneys were about health, not just about sickness, into at least the mainstream of the kidney community, if not the mainstream of the general public.
Yeah, just to pick up on these two seminal moments before you continue, you know, there's a couple observations that I think are applicable both to sort of the future as we think about how to advocate for millions of people with kidney diseases from a policy perspective, but also, you know, how other, I think, specialties could think about advocacy. Now, the first is, at the end of the day, federal policy, particularly federal health policy, is driven by funding and driven by what's spent, Medicare and Medicaid, but also from an appropriations perspective, if you look at the National Institutes of Health or the specific institutes, you know, what the spend is there. And I do think that ratio or that balance and sort of pointing that out became really important, and it did get people's attention. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think that really did drive a lot of the interest. You know, the concept of kidney health is really interesting, and it was something, you know, that was 2012 when Ron was president, and that was a real emphasis for him. You know, the two words that I heard him use a lot were health and cure, and I think it framed the discussion in a way, or reframed it in a way, that was really valuable. And again, I think helped engage the patient community in a positive way. The thing you didn't mention about the meeting with FDA, and that took place on World Kidney Day in March of 2012, is that at the time, most of those types of advocacy meetings, if that's the right way to put it, the community comes to the regulators in this case and says, we have this problem, we need your help in fixing it. And in this case, it was, we're not exactly sure what the problem is, but we want to work with you to really help eliminate barriers to bringing new products, new drugs, devices, biologics, and nutritional products to market. And I think that reframing of the discussion was also really valuable. So I do think those were two of the real key moments in this story.
Yeah, I think you're picking up on something, Todd, that has really defined ASN's approach to advocacy, which is it's very much a collaborative approach. I think, you know, there's definitely models where organizations sort of go to the federal government or government at any level and say, here's our problem, please fix it. And I think guided in large part by ASN's leadership, ASN's approach has tended to be more to policymakers, here's an issue, here's how we understand ASN's sort of responsibility set in terms of, in some cases, creating the problem, contributing the problem, here's what we think we can do to fix it. And here's also a specific idea or set of ideas where we think your taking action would help us solve this problem from a comprehensive and holistic perspective. You know, it doesn't always play out that way, but I think that's always been ASN's goal, and remains ASN's goal to approach conversations with partners in the federal government is just that, in partners trying to fix and achieve a shared goal or a shared problem.
Yeah, and there's a nuance in what you're saying, and it's a little, I want to be careful because the analogy may not work, but I think it's an interesting one, which is another approach which has been wildly successful sort of outside of healthcare, and I'm thinking specifically of say, we'll just use the gun lobby here, is if the attitude is, please don't address anything. In other words, any change is bad because it somehow opens up a Pandora's box. Then you end up in sort of a negative relationship with policymakers, either members of Congress or regulators. Again, I think that's harder to do in healthcare, but I think we've both seen that where it's, you know, we're afraid of any sort of decision or any sort of discussion here because it's going to open something up and what we may get is worse. And I think what you've done really well, and I think you deserve all the credit, is to say, what's best for the patient? If we start there and say we're focused on what's best for the patient, then we can decide working with people, having a conversation around, okay, here is the problem as you described. Here are some potential ways we're thinking about it. What's a way forward? I just think that's an interesting sort of aspect of all of this.
Well, certainly what you and I have termed the mantra, I think has served us well and really is at the heart of the philosophy, which is what's best for patients. That's the first question. What's best for the patient-physician relationship is the second question. You know, is there latitude to really individualize care? Are there options that can even be offered to individualize? And then third, and I think it's really important and probably fairly unique that an organization that represents nephrologists or physicians would put this question last in the three is what's best for ASN and what's best for nephrologists? You know, it's, I think, asking and answering those questions in that sequential order has led the society to some decisions and choices that I don't think we would have gotten to if we had asked questions in a different, in the reverse order.
I think that's right. So kind of going back to this decade-long story, so it's 2012, the Kidney Health Initiative is being established. What's sort of the next moment that sticks out to you after 2012?
Well, if there was one big success in 2012, there was probably also one fairly big failure, although it ended up, I think, in a good place, which is ASN had really advocated coming out of the Affordable Care Act to the newly formed Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation that they should develop a new demonstration program or pilot that looked at kidney care not as the sort of silo of kidney failure and dialysis, but as something broader that would go upstream to encompass chronic kidney disease, as well as include transplant care as a sort of holistic package. And as we all know, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation took a more interim step and launched something that was just dialysis focused. And, you know, at the time that was, that felt like a failure because we had advocated for something much broader and the agency, you know, with input from many stakeholders, ultimately took a different direction. I think what that did, however, was enshrine a commitment from the federal government. This is starting in the Obama administration to affirming and recognizing that kidney disease was a unique entity in healthcare, given its status as the only readily available, regardless of any age or income, to every American. So the fact that any care model was launched at that point in time, even though it wasn't the one that ASN exactly had in mind, put us on an important path. That, of course, then led to the Obama administration focusing significantly on kidney care and its efforts around organ donation and transplantation. And I think the community has a lot to be proud of in that every administration since the Obama administration has really taken on a responsibility of focusing on improving kidney health and care. Of course, we've now seen care models that do something much closer to what ASN had initially hoped for, launched under the Trump administration and sustained under the Biden administration.
Yeah, it's interesting. It kind of gets back to the observation you had at the beginning about the sheer obligation of the Medicare program and that initially getting people's attention. then the fact that policymakers realized there were levers and there were things they could do to both improve care, but also reconsider some of the payment obligations. And then the third piece, which I think we'll get to as we start to move closer to today, was all the issues around healthcare justice and just thinking about the patient population and the fact that it's disproportionately from minoritized populations. You'd mentioned the Obama administration. I think before we move from the Obama administration to the Trump administration, there was the Oregon Summit at the White House in 2016. What do you remember from that event?
To me, the Oregon Summit was a really exciting development because for the first time, it showed the federal government taking an interest in what, to my mind, based on my family's experience, and I think to the minds of most of the ASN leadership and kidney health professionals, is actually the optimal outcome for people who progress to kidney failure. Now, up to that point, certainly in my, would have been 6 years or so at ASN, and looking at the history of what I could glean from the last 30 or 40 years, there had not really been federal attention to transplantation and the issues around organ donation with a level of emphasis that I believe that it warrants. And my hope at the time was that it would catalyze and kick off much more policy change, as well as, frankly, just basic transparency and accountability in that industry. And fortunately, it was a success in that regard. And I think that's in large part due to the just Herculean efforts of Jennifer Erickson, who at the time was in the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy and has driven change in the field even since leaving that role.
Yeah, it's an interesting point about the combination between having the support of the administration at the highest level, but also having an individual, in this case, Jennifer, who feels so passionately about an issue that they're going to continue to advocate for it internally and externally. And I think that also, if we think about 2016, of course, was an election year. 2017, there's a new president. Having someone who also felt so strongly about the issue that wanted to make sure that it got continued between the two administrations, I think, is an important point as well. So as we continue to move forward in time, this wasn't how I intended to do it, but it's kind of a fun way to approach this discussion. What's sort of your next seminal moment?
I think the moment that I realized that incoming Secretary of Department of Health and Human Services, Alex Azar, had a personal connection to kidney diseases was a moment of incredible optimism for me, in the sense that any family who's been touched by kidney disease, I think, has a passion for seeing things improve for patients and for their families. And that, of course, as we learned, held true under his leadership at the Department of Health and Human Services. I think his appointment in that role was really a pivotal opportunity for our community to work hand in glove with the administration and start designing a series of really transformative efforts. There was also a meeting that Hugh and I attended with the newly minted Chief Technology Officer at the Department of Health and Human Services. And this would have been, I think, early 2018, might have been 2017. At any rate, you and I sat down, and I don't even get the sense that the new CTO, Bruce Greenstein, had unpacked his suitcase yet, and we somehow managed to finagle a meeting with him. And as you and I were describing our vision for this goofy prize competition concept that we thought had the potential to jumpstart innovation and bring new ideas and therapies to kidney patients, and we're going through our deck, we're giving it the pitch, and he just kind of holds up his hand and goes, like, stop, guys, like, enough. I'm with you. I believe you. My mother was on dialysis. Let's change this field. And that was the start, really, of getting what became KidneyX off the ground in partnership with the Trump administration. Many, many others, of course, played a role. And I should give a shout out to Sharon Moe, who helped us build the notion that a prize competition or a series of prize competitions could ultimately be the gimmick or the trick or the lever that we needed to garner more interest and investment in the kidney space, coming out of a series of conversations with the House Science Committee, you know, in the years prior to that meeting.
Yeah. The other person I would mention here, because I think he was the one that was handed responsibility for operationalizing it, but also links back to the Obama Oregon Summit, is Sandeep Patel at the time was at HHS. So it is funny how, you know, another lesson here is just these relationships, and you'll interact with someone and you have no idea often about their own personal or professional history. You know about their professional history, but not their personal history, and how valuable that can be in terms of people wanting to be advocates and help you. And on a separate podcast, we'll talk about the Kidney Week in New Orleans and the walk from the French Quarter to Frenchman Street. But we're starting to run out of time, so we'll move on from Kidney Acts. So Kidney Acts was signed by, as I recall, Bruce and Mark Acusa, who was the ASN president that year, in April, I think, of 2018, if I'm still on our path here. So what about since then? There's a couple things you probably want to mention before we close.
Yeah. Well, I think the development that I've been most proud of in my professional career to have been even a small part of was, of course, the executive order that was signed by President Trump in July of 2019. That was just, you know, we've mentioned a couple of people, and if I attempt to mention all the individuals who really championed that and made it possible throughout the Department of Health and Human Services and up and down the floors of the Hubert Humphrey Building, I would miss most of them. But I think what was so exciting about that executive order, apart from just the sheer significance of a president stepping forward, the first since Nixon to really personally embrace kidney disease as something that warrants Americans and taxpayers and the federal government's highest attention, was the fact that it wrapped together so many important priorities for policy change that the community had been working on for years. And, it, you know, with one swipe of the presidential pen, put into effect a greater emphasis on kidney health first and foremost, but also really enshrined a federal commitment to addressing kidney diseases before we get to kidney failure. You know, earlier I mentioned that was something that we tried to get off the ground in 2012, and less than 10 years later, it was incredibly gratifying to see, you know, the federal government affirming its commitment to trying to prevent kidney failure altogether. I think equally exciting, of course, was the commitment to transplantation. Again, not to minimize the importance of dialysis and the life-saving access that technology has and does provide, but to really see the federal government going after some of the underlying causes that prevent people from getting a kidney transplant, such as failures in our organ procurement organizations and misaligned incentives, was really, really powerful to see.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because I think it started to reframe how we messaged, if you will, both on Capitol Hill, but also with the administration, both that administration and then their successor, the Biden administration, the entire sort of kidney disease landscape. And I think one of the things that came out of that executive order were two awareness campaigns, one led by the National Kidney Foundation, Are You the 33%, which was really raising awareness within the public, and another led by ASN, United for Kidney Health, and the four being four priorities: intervening earlier, transforming transplant, research, discovery, and innovation, as well as increasing options for individual patients, and then finally really addressing healthcare justice or eliminating disparities. And so I think that's helped sort of frame as we're thinking about things moving on into the future.
Well, I think speaking of our efforts on the Hill, one of the things that's really helped the kidney community sustain that sense of momentum across the Obama and Trump and now Biden administrations has been the efforts of congressional champions, particularly the Kidney Caucus co-chairs, and currently Susan DelBene and Larry Bouchon. You know, they've led a bipartisan initiative to keep kidney health and kidney diseases at the forefront of policymakers' minds in a way that transcends administrations and provides, you know, cover and support for some of the big, bold initiatives that each of those three administrations I mentioned has led.
Yeah, and it's interesting just to shift gears for a second, because I think it's been both a positive story and perhaps a not so positive story. You know, as we've been 2 years from when the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 a pandemic, and during that time, I think there's been a lot of positives in terms of how the community, the kidney community, has worked together through the two administrations to try to really do everything possible to help the patient population, but also help healthcare workers in this arena. And then, you know, people who are now facing, you know, kidney diseases or kidney failure because of COVID-19. So that's sort of, I think, really been gratifying to see how the community works together. I think on the negative side, it has been a little difficult to get the recognition of to carry over sort of the level of interest in kidney diseases in the community with the two administrations. And so I think that has been a balancing act. And I'm sort of curious as to your reaction to the last couple of years.
Yeah, well, I think on the one hand, it's remarkable that either administration had the bandwidth or the wherewithal to do literally anything besides respond to the COVID-19 pandemic. I mean, I know leadership and day-to-day staff and both have just been swamped and dedicated and committed to focusing on COVID-19. And the fact that even despite that, both Trump and the Biden administrations have still managed to push forward some pretty transformative policies to improve the lives of people with kidney diseases is remarkable. And most recently, an ambitious transplant request for information that Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services put out, you know, amidst the Delta and Omicron waves, I think is one example of how this administration is committed to continuing the legacies from both Obama and Trump administrations. You know, on the downside, of course, I think despite the fact that the entire kidney community has been, you know, in lockstep about the types of recognition that we believe the vulnerable kidney patient, particularly dialysis and transplant patients, need and deserve, given their heightened risk for COVID-19, we haven't seen as much of an explicit focus on that patient population from the federal government in the context of the COVID-19 pandemic. And that's been disappointing and frustrating on a number of levels. You know, things have happened that have benefited the community, but I think as a whole, the sense in the kidney community is that more could have been done, you know, particularly when you think about the socio-demographics of the kidney patient population and how the burden of kidney diseases falls more predominantly on minoritized communities, just as the burden of COVID-19 has predominantly fallen on minoritized communities. And they've been dealt somewhat of a double whammy here without as much, I think, specific support from the federal government as our community and advocates would have liked to have seen.
Yeah, I think that's right. And just to circle back to ASN's response to the Department of Health and Human Services request for information, that is available on the main page of the ASN website. So you can, if you're interested in it's a 71-page response. So there's a lot of substance there, but I think it really does lay out a lot of what we've been talking about in this, you know, what's been happening over the last decade plus. I guess as we close, and I know there's a lot of other policy activities we could summarize, as well as people that really have been incredibly helpful to ASN, either inside the community or sort of internal advocates or externally, people have been really helpful. But as we close, I'm curious. I mean, you tend to see the world in a really unique way and tend to see, I don't know what the right word is. Strategy doesn't do it justice. It's kind of a if we're playing chess, you tend to see moves that are both simple and complicated at the same time. So if you were to give us as a community advice or sort of a parting shot, what would that be?
I think one of the reasons that ASN has changed so much as an organization and also been able to help drive transformative change in the field of kidney health is that the ASN leadership, particularly the ASN Council, they are brave enough to name a problem and acknowledge it, even when that's a problem that is arguably something that the society or the specialty has in large part contributed to or created over, you know, months, years, decades. To me, that's the core of really an opportunity for really transformative change, is when you have the fortitude to name a problem and describe it. And until you do that, solutions are going to be elusive or half measures. So I hope and I have every confidence that, you know, the future of the organization will include a culture that is willing to state publicly and firmly and vociferously when things are not working as they should. And once you've accepted that something isn't working optimally or as it should, then you have the freedom to start thinking creatively about solutions and driving those forward, you know, without any apologies.
It's interesting because what you're describing is called the Stockdale paradox to some extent, where you must maintain unwavering faith that you can and will prevail in the end, regardless of the difficulties, and at the same time have the discipline to confront the most brutal facts of your current reality, whatever they may be. I think that that is exactly right. I think that is the way to describe sort of the approach or the philosophy. Well, Rachel, thank you, and congratulations on your new role and your return to the land of enchantment. I don't know why I keep saying land of enchantment, but
because it's a superb state slogan, and it also happens to be true.
Yeah, it's a pretty good one, I have to admit. Not every state slogan is great. That's a separate discussion. It's, if we were to rank them, best or worst state logos, state mottos.
There'd be a lot of competition in the bottom quartile.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Well, Todd, thank you. It's been a pleasure. This conversation as well as the last 12 plus years.
Likewise. Thank you.
Thanks.